In the deep dark, the Aslan are moving, but there is a darker power. There is something behind the claw.
Welcome to Behind the Claw, Episode 6. We'll start off today by having a quick look in the mailbag. It's empty. Okay, straight on with the first segment. I have no idea. So, computer, what can you tell me about this place? This is the My Galaxy segment, where I give you some details about one of the planets that appear in the Tasesso subsector. The Bonsarin system's main population centre is the moon called Bonsarin, that orbits the unpopulated planet simply called Pill. With an extremely high population density, the surface of the moon is all but obscured by tall buildings. The extreme size of the population, in proportion to the moon's size, is due to the low gravity, which extends the lifespan of the majority of the inhabitants who do not live at the usual full 1G. Many social programs over the years have tried to reduce the birth rate on the moon, but without much success. The majority of the population live in the lower levels of the massive habitations where gravity is lowest and life is rather terrible. Due to the disparity in quality of life, Bonsarin has been the seat of many bloody revolutions and riots, to the point where it is now illegal for residents or visitors to own or to carry weapons. The local police force is massive and aggressively enforces all local codes and laws. Residents of the lower levels on Bonsarin are noted for their physical appearance. They tend to be taller than the imperial average due to the lower gravity. They also appear slender, which official reports say is due to their additional height, but residents say is due to the low number of calories that make it to the lowest levels. Food is predominantly imported into Bonsarin from nearby worlds. A number of hydroponic stations are in orbit around Pill to help feed the millions on the moon, but they assist the food situation rather than solve it. Many Bonsarin natives are unable to live or work in the standard 1G environment because their bone mass is somewhat lower than average. That said, Bonsarin does have its own merchant marine, and ships that they use operate with lower gravity settings than is normal on board ship. They've also developed a supportive pneumatic exoskeleton technology that allows those from the lower levels to work in higher G environments for short periods. They've also developed a number of drug therapies to assist them with their changed bodies. Bonsarin is actually noted for its medical drug exports. Visitors who wish to leave the starport are unlikely to have any problems other than curious looks from those that dwell in the lower levels. There is a feeling of animosity and a them-and-us feeling between the residents of the lower and those of the upper levels, but this rarely goes as far as violence, and of course the police are omnipresent.
No way. The way I heard it is that he was shipping arms, guns, you know, taking them straight in, under the navvy's nose.
Okay, it's time for a story C. This time, another mercenary ticket. A hideous disease on a planet is killing and out of control. Normal medical controls are not working. The rich people on the world have holed up in the mountain passes. And the people down on the lower plains are rioting and need to be kept out. So today's story seed is intended to be mercenary ticket, as I've said, although you could easily use it as a backdrop for a standard plot. The planet of Laravitna has a problem, or rather a certain class of citizen on the planet are having a problem. The economy on Laravitna has roughly split the population into the rich and the workers, or the poor. The client in this case is the rich, a group of well-off individuals who need protecting during this time of medical crisis. Laravitna is currently suffering an outbreak of a virulent local disease. There is no current cure or prophylactic treatment for the virus. The disease is called Bloody Nova and causes rapid disfigurement and tremendous pain, followed by bleeding through the eyes and ears, and is usually terminal within 5 days of exposure. Laravitna is in a state of near chaos as the airborne disease ravages and rages through the population, predominantly affecting the poor. The rich, the well-off people on the planet, have decided to temporarily and secretly retreat from the crisis into a mountain fastness. And there they intend to sit out this crisis until a cure is found. However, they are unable to use local forces to keep themselves safe, as the poor, the poorer people on the planet, actually make up the numbers in the armed forces. Thus, they have called for off-planet forces which can be trusted and be guaranteed free of the disease. This job calls for the mountain passes to be protected and policed. The poor and the sick must be kept away. Anyone falling sick within the fastness must also be thrown out. There will be a number of problems with this job. First, as the disease is airborne, the mercenaries will need to be under full environment control all of the time. Nobody goes outside without a vac suit, and when they come back in through the airlock, they need to be decontaminated. Members of the rich communities may fall sick and have to be dealt with, but these are very powerful people. Mobs of the poor may attack, and these will include local armed forces, all very angry at being abandoned. Rumours will abound amongst the poor that the rich have a cure and are keeping it to themselves, or even that they caused the disease in the first place. If the mercenary unit is delivered by commercial craft, they may have trouble in getting picked up. Resupply may also, likewise, be difficult. And behind all of this, the disease was actually man-made by a local firm who were trying to weaponize it before it escaped. That firm's off-world interests will turn up and try to eradicate any attempts at disease control. Their commercial interest is that they want to see it play out, to see whether it will be a worthwhile weapon.
No, sir, you may not dock here.
What the hell? I just made 3 jumps to get here.
Without permit 7C, you may not dock. Now move out to the holding line at 6,000 kilometres.
So this is the segment where I normally talk about some particular rule within the Traveller system, but today I'm actually going to look at the background material. I'm asking the question, how homogeneous is the Imperial civilization? If you travel from one planet to another, will everything be the same? Does everyone wear the same clothes? Do they eat the same foodstuffs? Does everyone speak the same language? In my games, language has never really been an issue, except when dealing with classic alien races like the Varg and the Aslan. I've had a trawl through the books looking for mention of languages, and it is notable by its absence. The Zadani and the Darians have their own languages, and they're sort of humanish. But other than that, my scan didn't reveal any other details relating to languages. I also didn't find much relating to cultural differences. The Core Worlds book does enable you to generate a little more information about planets, but no cultural information. This leaves it all in the arms of the referee and the scenario books that he has. I've tried to think of an Earth analogue to see how that might affect things. If you look to the American colonies, where they were separated from England by weeks of hard travel, you see cultural differences and language changes appearing quite rapidly. In space, where travel between planets is possible but expensive, and taking time, the same differences would easily emerge. I suspect they would emerge slowly on planets that shared a good deal of trade, for movies and written works would be common amongst all the planets, and that trade would therefore slow the process of change. But if the people on a planet were wholly or entirely engulfed in their own culture, as it were, the difference would grow and spread more quickly. New dialects emerge all the time in human culture, and that would be no different on other planets, especially amongst those on the opposite side of a world from a rarely used spaceport. So our game should really include that difference. It's a ripe situation for scenario and conflict and difficulty for the PCs. For the well-travelled core worlder, moving out to the outer planets and trying to speak to someone using a backwards dialect could be great fun. And as soon as you need to employ a translator, he could be up to all kinds of games. The World Generation book does give us some hints, as I said, of cultural difference, the lore level, and the type of government. I suspect the changes in a society that can lead to such varied types of law and government could easily represent significant differences in the cultural makeup of the planet. In my own games, I've tended to make spaceports very similar to each other, as they're all under Imperial control. But once outside of the bounds of the starport, the local culture can take over.
Ah, damn piece of junk! Who bought this anyway? No, don't you dare say it was me.
For today's review, we'll be taking a look at the Atlas of the Imperium PDF. I believe that when this was originally printed, it was in something similar to the A4 format, and that means that this scan is on a larger book, so it doesn't fit neatly onto a screen. The PDF is available from DriveThruRPG, and it's an ugly mess of a scan. They scanned a well-thumbed, well-used book, and it doesn't appear that they've done any clean-up on the result. The cover image is simply tatty. The PDF is 45 pages, and rather bizarrely, they've inserted a colour picture inside of a planet that has the T5 logo on it. It doesn't seem to bear any relation to anything else in the PDF, so it's quite weird. We have one page of introductory text, telling us about the grand project for mapping the Third Imperium, and that's what this book is. It's a grand-scale map of the Imperium and surrounds. The majority of this introductory page actually represents a key to the following maps, which is needed as the map is configured differently from the standard subsector iconography. So this book takes all of the known sectors and a few I've never heard of, and presents them with a sector that's not a subsector map per page. As you can imagine, with that amount of data per page, there is a heck of a lot of data to present, so there are no UPPs here. You might feel that that makes the book of limited use. I did at first, until I reread the introduction. This book is not about giving you all of the planetary data. It's a grand-scale map for navigation. Planets are shown, starports are shown, bases are indicated. Some planets of significance are even named, and some, their allegiances are mentioned. Now, unlike the usual hex map used to present a subsector, these maps are offset squares, which works surprisingly well. Because of the details on this map, it's so crammed that you'll have to zoom in quite a bit on the screen when you're trying to read it. There are over 30 of these maps in the book, each one a sector, and at the back of the book they even give you a blank that you can photocopy. Or screen print, possibly, as it's a PDF. It's basically one heck of a lot of data in here. But what is it good for? Who can use this book? As I said, it's not about individual planets. This is purely a campaign map. With the details provided, you can plan a huge journey across the Imperium. You can see all of the places where you could refuel and refit. And this would work well if you were trying to move fleets around and protecting vast swathes of Imperial space. Or indeed if you need to plan a journey of 50 jumps or more. And that's about it. Everything about this book is for the big picture, without worrying too much about the details. So in summary, I'm glad to have this in my PDF collection, but that's only because I'm collecting and not because I need it. I haven't had to use this grand-scale map yet, and to be honest, I don't know that I ever will. So it's not needed, and unless you have a very specific reason to get this book, you may as well not bother. But if you're a collector like me, then of course you will add it to your collection.
Did you hear that? What the hell do you think it is? Is it dangerous?
This is the creature catalogue, where I detail one of the strange creatures that appear within the Imperium. Today, it's the Jilbeeb. The Jilbeeb is classified as a filter-type creature. It's also considered a force of nature, and some smaller communities actually worship it as a living god. Most Imperial citizens would consider this kind of worship as simply insane, especially when they see the creature itself. The Jilbeeb is also known as the land whale because of its huge bulk. Often weighing many tens of tons, the Jilbeeb could easily be a danger to humans and livestock, except for the fact that it is also easily diverted and very slow moving. The animal grows to an adult length of around 30 feet, with a peak height of 8 feet, and appears as a half oval in profile. The measurement of the creature's height is problematic, as its single foot, which covers its entire underside, is normally beneath the ground to a depth of about 12 inches. Gilbeebs feed on the alluvial soil of their native land, and spend their entire lives moving very slowly, only inches per day, pushing forwards through the soil. They gather this soil in their wide, hard, bony mouths, which are permanently open, and at or below ground level. All living animals, insects and plant life is digested by the gilbeeb, and the cleansed soil is excreted at its rear. A side effect of its digestion process is that the excreted soil is very fertile and valued highly by farmers. When a pod of gilbeebs move through one of the homeworld's valleys, the indigenous population rush to plant their homesteads in their wake. The soil is so productive and so valued that crops are often quickly planted in the creature's immediate wake, within feet of its tail. The majority of locals allow the animal to roam where it will, although there are groups that plant rocks in order to divert the creature if it's heading towards their own existing crops. These control rocks, as they call them, need to be large and heavy, and the base needs to be below the level of the gilbeeb's foot. This process is actively objected to by some of those who wish the creature to roam freely. The feelings of both sides about the use of control rocks can run very high, even at religious levels, and can lead to violence. Visitors, especially those wishing to study the gilbeeb, should proceed with caution, as some of the locals are extremely protective. A number of gilbeebs have in the past been taken from their homeworld by companies seeking to use them in terraforming projects. But up to this date, these have always resulted in failure and death for the gilbeebs, which are apparently much more sensitive to their environment than their filter behaviour would suggest.
Welcome, traveller, to the Galactic Audio Library.
The following recording was taken from the bridge log of a corporate 400-ton trader that was found drifting, burned out and dead. The local Navy Patrol released this recording as part of a Lessons Learned educational program.
What the hell is that noise?
Ooh, Lieutenant on the bridge?
That noise? What is it?
I don't know, sir.
For the love of... What does the proximity sensor report?
Nothing, sir. It's not activated.
I know I'm new to the ship, but I would expect the Bridge Watch to be actually monitoring the ship's systems.
We do, sir.
But not the proximity sensor?
No. Captain's standing order, sir, to save power.
I feel the situation may warrant a little expenditure of power, Mr. Poldark.
Aye, aye, sir. Activating. Frack, we're being shot at!
Where away, Mr. Poldark?
Three points off the starboard beam, to aft. 2 points inclination. Why are they shooting at us, sir?
Maximum thrust, Mr. Anderson. Sound general quarters. Put the sandcasters to automatic. Warm up the lasers. Where are the gunners?
Why are they shooting, sir?
Pirates, Mr. Poldark. Pirates. Seal the doors! Vac suits!
So I'm here. Why don't you tell me why you called?
The spacer in the corner booth. Don't stare at him.
I see him. Who is he?
It's the guy on the news vids.
Which news vids? There are thousands of channels.
Crookwatch.
And this segment is People of Interest, where I highlight various people around the Imperium that are, well, of interest. Dralic Killone is a wanted man in many planets of the Imperium. The reason is that he runs an extensive inter-system crime syndicate. Of course, his organisation is fronted by many legitimate businesses. He's also known as a considerate, generous man in some systems, giving generously to various charities. Of course, those who are after his blood describe this charitable giving as nothing but a blind. Yet it cannot be denied that this fiscal giving has made a lot of people very happy. But let's look a little closer at what he does with his time. Let's start with his involvement in the vid entertainment industry. He's listed as the sole owner of Cominex, a film production and distribution company on Regina's capital. This company makes many millions per standard year and on average pumps out something like 30 films. These are usually large budget enterprises that employ thousands of back-end staff and, of course, the stars. He's often appeared at entertainment industry awards events to be photographed with the current glamorous stars and pick up their owners' awards. Behind this glitzy front, however, are an ongoing series of rumours and partially substantiated dark news stories. A Cominex combat movie was accused of superimposing the faces of Dralek's political enemies onto the bodies of characters being killed. A joke? Maybe. But many interpreted this as a threat against the individuals concerned. This news story ran for over 6 months, as it was noted that three of the people concerned had suspicious and terminal accidents. A non-profit charity funded by Mr. Cologne was also embroiled in a distasteful series of events. The charity, which was built around the idea of taking scouting service veterans who had fallen on bad times and helping them back into society, has been shut down on three of the six planets where it operates. In each of the three cases where the shutdown took place, there was evidence that something other than what was claimed was actually taking place. When veterans went missing, the charity claimed they had been rehoused. Yet some of those missing veterans were later found to be acting as assassination teams on other planets. One investigative media outlet claimed that footage it obtained showed the veterans living a life of luxury on a private moon owned by Dralek. The same moon was noted for containing military training ranges and a number of military-grade assault vessels. Although there has not been any direct evidence that Dralek Cologne has his own army, it is strange that so many of his political and business opponents have died in military-style attacks or simply disappeared.
Thanks for the trade, Tuchel. It was a pleasure doing business with you. So long, sucker.
And so we've reached the end game of another episode of Behind the Claw. If you have any thoughts or suggestions or questions or stories that you'd like to hear narrated, please do send them in to behindtheclaw@outlook.com. Thanks for listening. This podcast is released on an attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives license. Its home on the web is at behindtheclaw.blogspot.co.uk. Music by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com. I'm your host, Felbrig Napoleon Herriot. Thanks for listening. Prepare for jump.